Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Network. Now your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Chris Cleary, the former principal cyber advisor for the Department of the Navy. Chris, thanks so much for taking the time. It's good to catch up. This is a quote-unquote exit interview of sorts, so thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, Jason, appreciate you having me on, and I always like spending time with you, so I'm looking forward to this.
Well, there's a lot to talk about. You recently left in November after about 3 years as the principal cyber advisor. Discuss that decision. My understanding is probably was something that you weren't necessarily ready to go, but kind of it was the end of the appointment. So talk a little bit about
that. Yeah, and that's a fair way to sum it up. So I actually came to the Department of the Navy 4 years ago. I initially started as the Chief Information Security Officer working under sort of the re-empowered Department of the Navy CIO organization. A year into that, through the NDAA, they created the principal cyber advisor positions within each of the departments. And at the time, Secretary Braithwaite, who was the Secretary of the Navy at the time, decided to appoint me into the position. Now, because the department was struggling with its own billet structures, you know, you got to remember this is 2020. This is part of the reduction of senior executive billets. So the Navy was trying to create a billet at the same time it was trying to reduce by 10%. So what they had to do is they created what they called a term limited position. That was the way they could create the billet with some level of expediency and not have to jump through a bunch of hoops. So I knew going into this that this was a 3-year gig. You're right. I would have liked to stay for another year. You know, you never feel like you've finished what you've started, so to speak. And with any of these government jobs, it takes you 18 months to learn what you're doing anyways. So you get into year 3 and you finally feel like you're kind of firing on all cylinders. We tried to extend the position for another year. The secretary was working through OPM, but it was one of these things that just got challenging with the rules based on, you know, what a term limited position was. And I knew I was coming back to the Navy as an HQ initially, that this wasn't a career for me. I wasn't going to be here for more than 4 or 5 years anyways. I had another year left in me. But you know, it was kind of the needs of the Navy, and I was certainly happy and prepared to transition back to the commercial world.
Your role as principal cyber advisor is not the same as the chief information security officer. I think let's make sure folks know that, because I think a lot of times I think people confused you with the CISO and you were like, well, I'm not the CISO. So talk a little bit about how your role is different.
Yeah, and that's a good one, having come from being the CISO. So that was, you know, there are some people when I came into the organization that still probably remembered me as a CISO. So when the principal cyber advisor positions all got created, it was, you had to, if you remember back in the 2019, 2020s, this is when all the departments were sort of re-empowering their CIO organizations. You know, saw the Navy put Aaron Weiss into the position at a very elevated level. You saw the Army bring in Raj Iyer and then separate their two world with their CIO world. And the Air Force had done this a little before even the Navy had done it. So when the PCAs came onto the scene, there was a little bit of confusion about what makes the PCA a little bit different and how you're not the CISO or the Chief Information Security Officer. And I think the way that we carved out our own little workspace in the beginning was when you looked at the compliance side of cybersecurity, risk management framework, identity management, a lot of the zero trust initiatives, those are very CIO or CISO focus things. And I agree with that. That should be a CIO and a CISO function. Where the PCAs came in was sort of to the right of all of that. The things that we didn't traditionally look at through the lens of enterprise IT security, you know, operational technology ashore and afloat, war fighting means and methods, the capability, the acquisition of capabilities we're going to do for offensive cyber, the man training and equipping of the mission force. And really, at the end of the day, the resourcing of all of the above. When you get into one of the main jobs of the PCA was to be weigh in on the adequacy of the cyberspace activities budget, which for the Navy was about $11 billion chunk of money. About $2 billion of that you would call probably cyberspace activities, you know, offensive cyber, mission force, OT security things. But to help advocate with the CIO and to champion that whole resource to ensure that these areas were being adequately funded. So, you know, to sum it up again, the CISO did a lot of the enterprise IT, a lot of the compliance things. And I'll say the PCAs, we came in more to the warfighting resourcing side of the equation.
And I think what the Navy learned, and I think all the services learned over the years, was this cyber thing is bigger than any one person can handle it. And when you start talking about OT, when you talk about warfighting, you talk about offensive capabilities, that is not a traditional role for a CISO. Is that what you've learned over your 3 years or so in that role too, that yeah, I could jump into RMF and I could jump into Zero Trust, but there's this whole set of requirements and needs that the Navy had.
No, and that's a great way to say it. And if you, I think we've talked about this before, you know, a year and change ago, when we released the cyberspace superiority vision, and we bucketed up into that secure, survive, strike mantra. And I know you've talked about that and you've written about that in the past. You know, when you get into that secure bucket, to your point exactly, there's no shortage of people within the Department of the Navy or the Department of Defense, you know, for that matter, that are focusing on your traditional cybersecurity problems, right? You have CIO organizations, you have CISOs, you have things like NCDOC with the Navy and the MCOG with the Marine Corps, you know, and we've done things like Flank Speed and rolled out our own Zero Trust initiatives, you know, leveraging tools like Microsoft Defender. There is no shortage. Again, you never have enough, right? So I'm not going to say that it is a perfect environment in there. But when you look at the resources that we have available in the traditional enterprise IT, you know, unclassified, you know, business systems, there is really no shortage of people over there to do those things. They're well-resourced, and there's organizations that have stood up specifically to do that. So I don't think there's, you know, the PCA or one more person trying to be in that fray doesn't really add anything to it, right? I would say, look, hey, there's lots of professional qualified people to go do that. But then when you started opening up the aperture and looking at this new stuff we call cyber from a warfighting perspective, again, this still struggles as a mission space within the Department of Defense. And then you look at things like operational technology, things that are slid or not, you know, they don't fit neatly into the enterprise IT bucket. They have their own vulnerabilities and risks associated with them, but they're things that we haven't traditionally looked at. You know, when I'm talking OT, you know, weapon systems, defense critical infrastructure, these massive foundation of things that not only enable what we do from an enterprise IT standpoint, you know, email and logistics systems, but hey, you got to keep the lights on and the water flowing. And the Aegis weapons system has lots of computers with it that isn't an enterprise IT system. Who's looking at those? Who's resourcing those? It's only been the last decade or so that we've seen a lot of these as legitimate target areas. And if you remember this last year in particular, at the unclassified level, the things we talked about happening out in Guam, Vault Typhoon, you know, quote unquote, the adversary living off the land, that's a really, really hard problem to solve for an area that, honestly, the Department of the Defense, not just the Department of the Navy, has not really been paying a lot of attention to, particularly the OT ashore side of it. And over the last 3 years, working with folks like John Garska and ANS and some other folks under the Strategic Cybersecurity Program, we brought a lot more attention to things like weapon systems and defense critical infrastructure. And then was always in the quagmire of the fight with whether it was enhanced budget control or we've talked about this in the past, you know, the readiness issues associated with the mission force. Those are the other areas that the PCA weighed in very heavily on.
And as we get into our conversation, Chris, we will talk more about some of those efforts you've been leading and helping to oversee over the last couple of years, too, in that OT and non-traditional kind of enterprise IT. But before I take you down that path, let me just ask you, what comes next for you? I know there's a little bit of news on LinkedIn about you are now the president of the Military Cyber Professionals Association. That seems to be more of a hobby is not the right word, but a give back to the community, I'll call it. But talk about what comes next for you.
Yeah, so two things. I'll be going back to industry. It wasn't a surprise to anybody else that I'd be heading back to industry in one shape or form. I came from Leidos, a big defense contractor, before I came back into the Navy. It's no surprise I was going to head out to one of those companies on the way out. The Military Cyber Professional Association, just as a plug for that, is an organization started by a guy named Joe Billingsley about 8-ish years ago. I've been involved with this organization in one way, shape, or form since its inception. Basically, it is, as the name implies, an organization set up specifically for military cyber professionals. It's our collection of like-minded individuals that have served either in uniform or as civilians, right? This is not just, didn't have to be military, but you were sort of associated with the warfighting side of the mission. And as Joe's continued to grow the organization, we're at 4,000 members. I'd encourage anybody to go to the website, milcyber.org, look at the list of senior advisors. It's sort of the who's who from a flag and general officer perspective of who's contributed to grow this mission in the beginning. And Joe wanted to put a little more of a formal face on it. He asked if I would step up and be the president of the national the national president of the organization. I did that with a smile on my face because I think the MCPA can really give back to the community. And that's kind of what we're set up to do. We work closely with the US Cybercom. We sponsor a lot of their events when they have meetings or planning sessions. We provide the refreshments after the meeting. So we're sort of like, we show up with the orange slices after the soccer game, so to speak. But with that keeps us in the game, right? Keeps those advisors, those people that came from the mission space close to it. And we offer ourselves up, as advisors when and if required. If there's a little, with the new leadership, Tim Hawk, who, congratulations to him finally getting confirmed to be U.S. Cybercom, and General Hartman moving over to be the deputy, and Lorna Maylock, who's going to be fleeting up to be the mission force commander. I've worked very closely with all of them in the past, and we sort of leave it open-ended for the MCPA to support in any way, shape, or form that we can moving forward.
I think if folks want to find out more about the Military Cyber Professional Association, obviously we can link to that on federalnewsnetwork.com as well, make it easy for them. And I'm sure it's open to, is it open to anyone who is an interest, or how does it work?
It really is. I mean, it's a free membership, right? It's a tracking way that we just bring people into it. This year will be our third year of HammerCon. So we have a conference that we do. We have publications that we put out. And it's really open to anybody who's come from this environment in any way, shape, or form. And really, if you haven't worn the uniform or been in one of these organizations, you're certainly not excluded from being part of this. We would love as much support as we can. But we initially set it up for those who have sort of been there, done that, because there's a, for the 10 years, and I say that we've been doing this for 10 years, and it's more than that, 12 years, 13 years now since the creation of US Cybercom back in October of 2010. So I kind of go back to that as the AD line, right? The marker that sort of created the cyber community. I know we were doing it a lot longer before that, but the inception of US Cybercom sort of laid that marker down, and hey, we'll kind of use this as the beginning. So anybody that's had anything to do with this mission space has understood the frustrations of it getting started, the challenges with, we could go on and on, zero trust or offensive capability, or how we fully integrate things like cyber operations into the kinetic world. All of those things are still very much open for debate and discussion. And anybody that's contributed, we would love to have that participation back into the org.
All right. Well, very nice. It sounds like a good professional association, and there's never enough kind of folks who are able to give back. Chris, on that note, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion. My guest today is Chris Cleary, the former principal cyber advisor for the Department of the Navy. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Chris Cleary, the former principal cyber advisor for the Department of the Navy. Chris, we'll continue our exit interview talking about your time with the Navy over the last 3+ years. I'm going to go back to your time in the Department of Navy as a principal cyber advisor. Let's talk about your experience there a little bit. What are you most proud of? What are some of those accomplishments? Walk me through some of those things as you look back over the last 3 years.
I can't say enough how much I loved this job. I mean, and I know a lot of people say that. I really, really mean it. But it was not without its challenges. Like anything else, again, you got to go back to 2019, 2020. The Navy was turning over secretaries of the Navy. It seemed like, every couple of months we were getting a new one. And we had Secretary Spencer and Secretary Modley. And then we had the undersecretary from the Army come over to keep the seat warm. And then we had Secretary Braithwaite show up for just a couple months before the administration changed out. And then we had Secretary Harker keep the seat warm until finally Secretary Del Toro showed up. And, as an organization that reported directly to the Secretary of the Navy, I just rattled off 6 names, and that happened in about 12 to 14 months, if I remember correctly. I mean, continuity was a challenge in the beginning because just there was so much turmoil, not only with things that were going on with the department, but then you had the administration change out, the appointment of a new secretary. So there was a lot of that. And to add to it, the PCA was every bit a startup as anything you could have a startup anywhere, whether it's commercial or private or in the government or a new office. So all new offices go through the same challenges. You've got to get people. You've got to get people to understand why you exist. You've got to get resources. You got to get an office, maybe a parking space, right? So there was all the challenges of just getting something going that, to be honest with you, in the very, very beginning, nobody really wanted here. Now, again, I'll go back to I was the CISO. So when the Secretary Braithwaite at the time said, hey, Chris, this kind of looks like you. Congratulations to the PCA. Now, secretly, having read the language, I was dying inside to do this job. right? I would have given anything. I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. I would do anything to be the PCA. So when it was dropped in my lap, so first of all, I was excited, but then I was like, oof, this is challenging, because all the services in the very, very beginning wanted to get rid of the PCAs. There was a ledge prop that was trying to be submitted, and Congress sort of came over the top, said, no, you're going to do this. So year one in the job, I make the joke, I was sort of just trying to be avoided getting smothered by a pillow. Because, you know, hey, what's another, we just stood up the CIO office, we just re-empowered the CIO. What's a PCA, and what's this person going to do for the organization? But now I was very attuned to that and ready that, you know what, I just work here. If the decision is to push back on this creation and maybe do away with the PCA job, I was just going to go back to being the CISO. And I was just kind of being a good sailor, right? Whatever that was the best needs of the Navy, I was prepared to do that. So after the first year, and then it looked like this thing was not going anywhere, it was, oh, great. Well, now how do we bring value to the organization? The one thing that the PCA office was most visible for, and we, again, it was still kind of a maturing process. We've only done this, it'll be four times now that Scott St. Pierre has got to get the next one out, which is we submit a letter on the budget adequacy every year, somewhere in the POM process. And what we found was it was the subjects at the time, you know, the mission force, OT security, zero trust was just kind of getting off the ground in 2019. And, you know, you're looking at about a $2 billion budget, and it was things like, well, you know, it was hard to point to money being a reason why our readiness levels were low. Okay. And cybersecurity was still, it was hard to sort of quantify everything you were doing in there, but there were some things that were very obviously being under-resourced. And I'll go, you'll hear me say the OT stuff over and over and over again, because it was glaring that the department really was not resourcing this area. So, hey, okay, now what is the PCA going to go do? So the first couple of years, I found that the PCA office really became the champion for advocating and supporting programs like Mosaics, which was a thing we were doing for OT systems ashore, and another program called Sabre, which was kind of its cousin, which was OT stuff afloat. And what you found is both of those programs are sort of being championed by, you know, hardworking, honest Navy employees that just couldn't break squelch to get them properly resourced or funded or programmed for. So the PCA was able to champion these things within the E-ring of the Pentagon. And things like Mosaics, as an example, I am very proud of. We worked very closely with Assistant Secretary of the Navy, Meredith Berger, who is EINE, or Energy Installations and Environments, the ASN for that. She very quickly recognized the problem. Most of this fell kind of within her sphere of influence as the person responsible for resourcing all of the Navy's infrastructure. And she very quickly embraced this, adopted it, hired an individual within her organization to look at this specifically. So I take a lot of credit for that, to get her to expend her own resources to bring somebody into their organization to do that. And then we were able to do deep dives. The Undersecretary of the Navy 2 years ago, you know, in addition with a lot of deep dives that he was looking at specific issues, cyber became one of them. So, and then the following year, you know, 20 some odd deep dives became four or five or six. Cyber remained one of them. So we were able to make enough of an argument that the Undersecretary of the Navy, Eric Raven, said, this is important enough that we should be deep. You know, Chris, you've made your point. I got it. You're right. I do think we're not resourcing this appropriately. Now help me understand where those shortfalls are. And the most obvious one was things like OT. We drove on that the deepest, because things like enhanced budget control were starting to run their own course, right? Cybercom was getting a lot of access to a little bit more money. There were some issues around that. And then in the IT or enterprise IT side, Project Thunderdome and Flank Speed and Zero Trust being rolled out at the enterprise was also really going very, very well. You know, I really tip my hat to NCDOC, Vice Admiral Clapperton, who's over there, and Captain Sharon Pinder, and Captain Christina Hicks before her, that were the commanding officers of NCDOC that were taking a lot of the responsibility of rolling these programs out. I mean, a tip of the hat. They did something very, very challenging, very, very rapidly. Again, all sort of under the umbrella of the CIO office within the Department of the Navy. So again, amazing accomplishments there. But then as we're all taking a victory lap over here in the IT space, it was very, hey guys, what about the OT space? You know, 90% of the Navy is underpinned by things that at the time were inadequately resourced and inadequately protected. And again, I would pat myself on the back and the office on the back again with the other PCAs, the Army and the Air Force PCAs, working with things like the Commander of Naval Facilities Command that was championing these things, to be nothing more than the advocate for the work that they were doing. Again, the PCA didn't do any of the work to create these things. We just championed them appropriately and ensured they got the attention they deserved, and then ultimately the resourcing required so they could be successful.
Interesting. You talk about when the PCA was first developed, there was actually a pushback. There was a legislative proposal, and Congress actually, we'll give them credit here, Chris, did the right thing by saying, no, this is actually more important than you think it is. Were you surprised that, you know, a lot of times when DOD pushes back on something, Congress goes, well, they are the experts, let's listen to them. Or there's always a champion who kind of puts a hold on something or slow rolls implementation. Were you surprised that the Congress was actually right on this one?
Yeah, I don't know if, again, right. I'm going to challenge the right word, right? Because I think there's still some people that might say whether it was the right decision or not. So again, when you go back to that time period, I was still very green as the way the Pentagon works, right? So ledge prop, you know, the NDA comes out. Typically the services get 30 to 40 ledge prop things to go back in and say, hey, we want to challenge, you know, 30 or 40 things. The PCA implementation was one of them, but that ledge prop never, I think, made it out of the Pentagon. So, you know, the services sort of put it together and they said, hey, you know, we're not sure that this PCA thing maybe conflicts with the CIO. And we just did it again. And it was a valid argument. I'm not even here to say that that wasn't a sound argument. Again, I came from the CIO organization initially, so I got it. And I, you know, there's a lot of it I wouldn't necessarily argue some of it, right? I mean, there were some legitimate reasons why the cyber world was getting a little convoluted. Now, but the reason the PCA was coming into existence in the first place was, I think Congress would come and ask a question and they would get 10 different answers from 10 different people. I'm not saying we got there, but the idea was the PCA, hey, PCA, I have a question. And I would go back and get 10 different answers from 10 different people and then try to consolidate that answer into something that made sense that we could agree upon and present that answer back to Congress. I'm not going to say we fully succeeded there because there are a lot of ways around the PCA and the PCA offices. But I think as the offices get more and more established, organizations like Fleet Cyber and for the Navy, the Naval Information Forces, near the end, they were seeing the benefit of, hey, you know what? I don't want to have to deal with the staffers on a regular basis. Let Cleary deal with the staffers. So here's our responses. Chris, you go deal with it and, you know, we'll inject and as required. But hey, if this is the PCA's job to be the middleman in all this and deal with the back and forth, let the PCA do it. And that was coming along. They did see the three-headed dragon, and I don't mean that in a negative way, that is the N2N6, NAV I4, and Fleet Cyber, you know, the three stars that for the most part are the operational force of this. They were coming around near the end to say, all right, I see the value of the PCA and the Marines, you know, the similar on the Marine side, Deputy Commandant of Information and, you know, MAR4 Cyber. They did begin to see some of the value of it and began to leverage the PCA office a little bit as my tenure was ending.
And I think that tends to happen. Change is always, well, what does this mean for me? What's this going to, oh, now I see over time, and maybe that's part of your benefit of your personality and how you looked at the role, that opened the door for them to go, oh yes, let's make Chris the belly button to push so they stop pushing my belly button, but we can kind of work with Chris to get those questions answered. So I think.
You know, and on that note, to follow that up, and when people would say, well, Chris, you're not pushing hard enough. And I'd say, all right, well, I'm going to call it, I'm actually pulling. And I use the analogy of a fishing line. When you start pulling on a fishing line and you're not sure what the test of the weight of the fishing line is, right? If you break the line, it's over. So the trick was to pull on it with just the right amount of tension without risking breaking it. Because I knew that if the PCA office was something new, that if the relationships with those organizations became tenuous or were cut off because of, you know, the PCA coming in and say, hey, you shall do this, or no, that wasn't the way I envisioned the role of the PCA was not to tell anybody inside the organization how to operationalize their own environments. They're all three stars. They've been doing this for a lot longer than I am. My whole job was to go to them and understand what it is they needed based on their experience and their expertise, and then get them that. And the more that I could be seen as a value and not, hey, I'm not here to check your homework and to poke you in the eye and say, our readiness is screwed up because of this. No, it was, hey, what do you need to improve your readiness? You need more money. You need more people. You need something written in a policy. You need an instruction updated. You need a whatever created. That's why the PCA was there. And really it was about establishing trust. And it was very personality based, you know. You see the way certain personalities, you know, operate within the Pentagon. And we've all heard the stories of the people that flip the desks over or refuse to take the phone calls or slow roll you till you leave. Yep. Those are all true. Those things all happen. So the trick was, how could the PCA really be come in and seen as a trusted advisor? Something that, hey, you know, I'm not here to cause you any grief. I'm really here to bring you things. And again, that was the intent. Again, I'm proud of the fact that at the end of the day, the Navy PC office left with a pretty decent reputation of being able to do those things.
Chris, on that note, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion. My guest today is Chris Cleary, the former principal cyber advisor for the Department of the Navy. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Chris Cleary, the former principal cyber advisor for the Department of the Navy. Chris, we'll continue our exit interview talking about your time with the Navy over the last 3+ years. Chris, you mentioned a couple programs. I want to talk a little bit more detail. You mentioned Mosaic and Sabres too, but I want to talk about the thing that when I saw you before you left, you were very excited. I think it was probably at Navy IT Day. We talked briefly. And one of the things you mentioned was the new Navy strategy, cyber strategy. And you're so excited that, hey, we're at the finish line. We're so close. We got to get this out before I leave. It's out. It came out, I think, probably the day you left, November 21st. Talk a little bit about the strategy. Walk me through it. 7 focus areas. And how does this position the Navy for the future?
Look, the strategy in itself is an interesting story, which started the day I took the job. When Secretary Del Toro came in and he gave me my marching orders, said, Chris, you get with the CIO, write a strategy, which we did. And for anybody listening to this who had quoted me 6 months ago, 12 months ago, 18 months ago, strategy's imminent. I apologize to each and every one of those people because the strategy was imminent at each of those times. But what we found was, as you got caught into the bureaucracy of the building, and the thing that we were very, very conscious of was not getting ahead of our boss at the time being either the president or the Secretary of Defense, which had their own strategies being released. So even though we had one written, and granted, even over those 12 or 18 months of saying it was coming out, it went through multiple revisions because we had the time. We wanted to make sure we were aligned with what the president released and what OSD released. So that was really the delay in all of it. The reason we wrote the strategy in a year before it, the cyberspace superiority vision, was nothing had existed at the secretariat level defining how we were going to do cyber for the Department of the Navy. Now, we had cyber security documents. We had the 5239 series that was both at the secretariat level and at the OPNAV level that said these are the cyber security instructions to talk about things like RMF, and the compliance and the things we need to do around the risk management framework. Yeah, we had all those. But there was nothing else that talked about cyber writ large. And this is why it was a cyber strategy and not a cyber security strategy. Because in it, again, without kind of going through the 7 individual lines of effort, 80% of it, somebody's going to open up a document and go, yeah, this all makes sense to me. We're talking about zero trust and we're talking about cyber ready and we're talking about workforce. We're talking about partner operations. Yeah, okay. Got it, Chris. That's what I would expect to see in that. Okay, but then where we opened up the aperture a little bit is principally around bringing specific attention to operational technologies on call out, because I can't peanut butter spread things like zero trust just uniformly across everything that has a computer. It just doesn't work that way. And in people who do think it works that way, zero trust conceptually, the 7 pillars and 142 requirements in a zero trust. Yeah, conceptually, you can really point this at anything, but I can't use the same tools all the time, right? I couldn't necessarily run Microsoft Defender against everything that was in the OT space as well, albeit there are places that Microsoft Defender can live in that space, and the Navy was making initiatives to roll that out. Again, Vice Admiral Clapton's a big champion of that. He's moving in a very positive direction. Okay, but then there's things like Defender and our current zero trust strategy wouldn't work for. You know, you get down to what they call it, the Purdue model. into the OT stack, the further you get down closer to an actual device or a controller, well, I just can't roll a firewall out against that. But then the other piece that we were really proud of in the document is to start calling out cyber operations specifically. And this sort of, I would get, argues to what I would call the strike side of the cyberspace superiority vision, which was, hey, we are a warfighting organization. Yes, all the things we need to do for cybersecurity, whether it be enterprise IT or OT, got all that, and we're moving in a positive direction. Hey, but this is still something we need to professionalize around, which really involved, manning and training the workforce, and then equipping the workforce, principally the military side of the workforce that was going to go off and do things with the Cyber Mission Force or U.S. Cyber Command or Fleet Cyber, to ensure that the Navy was adequately prioritizing this every bit as much as they were prioritizing things like our zero trust strategy. And then to further that point, if you go to the end of the document, you start talking about, partner operations. So how do you begin to bring the other interested parties into a room and say, I'm going to point at a spot on the map, whether this is a base or a camp or a station or an island, and say, hey, this is not just a Navy or an Army or an Air Force problem. Because the minute I get out of that fence line, I'm now talking about state and local government. And I'm now talking about organizations that we don't have the authorities to operate outside of our fence line. And how do we begin to have that conversation to talk about things where I have to be partnering with other organizations outside the Department of the Navy? And to be honest with you, I don't think we don't do a good enough job at that. We talk about it, but my deputy, Josh Ryder, when I was in the building, was famous for saying the say-do gap. We say a lot of things, and then when you look for execution, whether we do them or not, which what I would challenge the next PCA for coming in is, yes, hey, thanks, Cleary, for leaving me with this cybersecurity strategy. Now I have to do something with it. Yep, unfortunately, that is true. The implementation of this strategy will sort of start with the CIO and the PCA organization trying to figure out how to do implementation plans for it, and then working with organizations like NCDOC and Fleet Cyber and MAR4 Cyber and the acquisition community. How are we rolling these things out and how are they measurable? But the strategy gives everybody something to point back to. Beforehand, there wasn't anything to point back to. There was no North Star. And I think what the strategy simply does at its most basic function is give somebody, whether an organization or an agency or a working group, to point back to a document and say, the Secretary of the Navy signed this out and it says we're going to do these seven things and these sub lines of effort within each of the seven, core lines of effort. How are we mapping back to these things, which is ultimately then how you can start measuring implementation, which is, again, the job of the next PCA.
Chris, I want to jump in because I appreciate the explanation of how it got out the door and some of the key pieces. When you do read the strategy, there's not a lot of there, right? So are we to expect some implementation plans under each of those lines of effort? Walk me through what's coming next for 2024.
Yeah, that's a great question and a fair question. You're right, because the strategy isn't an implementation plan. It's just it's a North Star. What we were very, very conscious of, because you got to remember, OSD released their strategy. And as I was leaving, they had their first implementation meeting, right? So here's the OSD strategy that the services are responsible to map back towards. One of the reasons we waited so long to release ours is we wanted to make sure that our lines of effort mapped to their lines of effort. And they don't map one for one. It's not a one for one correlation necessarily, but there's, I can say under, effort 4-3, it maps to their effort 2-1 as an example, just as an example. Because we can take credit for implementing things in the OSD strategy by implementing things in our strategy. But to your point exactly, yes, what is the implementation of this document? And it is a fair criticism to say, look, strategies are just that. It's a piece of paper for somebody to look at, and it looks pretty on a desk somewhere with the glossy and the graphics and the powerful words. Got it. How are you getting after those things? And I think it is fair to ask the next PCA and the CIO, what is the implementation strategy of this document? And they're going to sit down and probably begin to sign work out, obviously the cyber operations piece, which I think is line of effort 4 or line of effort 5. That's surely a NAVI4 Fleet Cyber problem. The Cyber Ready Initiative is certainly a CIO problem to solve. partner operations. That, you know what? That's a good one. I think there's almost, you know, when you get an executive steering committee to get, hey, let's unpack this partner operations. Who is the organization responsible for pulling these group of people together? That's a fair one. And I think that's what the, you know, the implementation strategy or implementation plan would begin to hammer out. But it's going to be a little ways before we get there on that.
Chris, on that note, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion. My guest today is Chris Cleary, the former principal cyber advisor for the Department of the Navy. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Chris Cleary, the former principal cyber advisor for the Department of the Navy. Chris, we'll continue our exit interview talking about your time with the Navy over the last 3+ years. When you look at some of this, the strategy, are there areas where you feel like, okay, we've made more progress on, and areas where obviously we still have a lot to go? I mean, just reading through it, one of the things that obviously stood out to me when you talk about shift from compliance to cyber readiness, you talked about ongoing ATO authority. You talked about, for instance, regular adversarial assessments. I thought that was really interesting, you know, kind of looking at risk assessments, conducting program reviews, automated manual testing of security protections from an adversary's perspective. Can you talk a little bit about the thinking behind some of that and why that was important to add? Because you could have, you have 5 areas under line of effort 2, but you probably could have had 25 or 50 areas. How'd you come up with maybe those?
Sure. So line of effort 2, the Cyber Ready Initiative, was really the brainchild of the CIO organization, mapping all the way back to Aaron Weiss before he left. Jane Rathbun, who's now the CIO of the Department of the Navy, sort of took that and ran with it. And basically what the core of that was is there's nobody that would really push back on this, what I'm going to say next, when we'd say, look, the RMF framework is broken. What it's designed to do is fundamentally, it's a compliance-based drill. Hey, I need to keep you honest. Are you meeting the 641 security controls as laid out by the RMF framework? And it's 600 and some odd. I can't remember the exact number. But what the idea was, if you looked at something like SolarWinds, right, as a cyber, and I don't want to call it attack, I'm going to call it an event, right? Because I have a lot of heartburn over the way we use the word attack. I think we've talked about that in the past as well. The thing that we call SolarWinds, a lot of those things that SolarWinds touched had legitimate RMF packages associated with them that had been, you know, put out. They had authorities to operate. And they weren't slowed, you know, the adversary was not slowed down by an RMF package. You know, when they do their operational preparation of the environment, they're thinking about a target system. You know, they don't say, well, look, they just released an RMF framework. You know, they just got the ATO on this 2 weeks ago. I guess we should give up. Like, that's not at all what happens. It never happens. Now, the RMF framework, these are my words, and I've been playing with this for a while. That's kind of like eat right and exercise, right? You know, there are some things that you should be doing that are just good business, good best practices. But if you're not doing those on a regular basis all the time and continually changing your environment or updating, not just every 3 years when your ATO comes up for renewal, but continuously monitoring. Again, continuous monitoring. This is not a new concept to anybody, but this idea, the fundamental idea behind Cyber Ready is moving away from compliance, a compliance sort of way of doing business, and moving towards a readiness. You know, when I would say I was a naval surface warfare officer, you know, you weren't compliant to go to sea. You were ready to go to sea. And there are things broken on your ship. You know, your ship wasn't a pristine, every piece of equipment worked exactly the way it was. And every man was trained or woman was trained to the standard they need to be to. And every billet was filled. Nope. Somebody makes a decision based on the configuration, the readiness of the ship. We're ready to get underway. And we do that. We acknowledge that it's not a perfect environment we're operating in. That's sort of what the idea of Cyber Ready is. Again, now, how do you measure that? How do you go back? And this is where they get to, you know, adversarial assessments and red teaming activities. Again, you're getting into a resource constrained environment of now, how do I continually measure where any system is on the risk management framework through this idea of continually looking at it? That's what the implementation plan is going to be all about. Not easy.
Chris, we could talk about the strategy longer. Let me jump into some of those other cyber priorities. What did you leave for 2024 teed up for the Don for the next acting and or permanent principal cyber advisor?
So there were two things. So I had an exit interview with the secretary on my way out. And there were really two things that I tried to impress upon him on my way out the door. And these were my observations after being in the job for 3 years. And one is Cyber must be a core competency of the Department of the Navy. You know, we are witnessing a fundamental shift in warfare, in my opinion, right? We are seeing this quagmire between, you know, kinetic and non-kinetic, you know, IO operations, cognitive warfare, that just you're trying to make people change their minds or change their decisions through media manipulation and meddling with elections and all those. There's lots of ways that I can deliver effects without, you know, firing a weapon at somebody. So cyber has to be core to this, because we're also seeing our dependencies, like I called out with OT security, ashore and afloat, things that we haven't traditionally looked at as targets that are really wide open for adversary activity. We have to focus on those things. It's got to be a core competency. And if not, we do that at our own peril if we think that we're just going to make enough submarines or ships or joint strike fighters or Abrams tanks to solve these problems. We're not. Two, Vice Admiral Clapperton, as the operational commander of his domain, needs to have somebody that he can lean on that presents him a Navy cyber platform. You know, when you look at the censoring strategy of how we're going to censor everything, it's not just zero trust. Zero trust is mostly deployed in our unclassified enterprise IT environments. Granted, 750,000 endpoints, it is a massive deployment. Victory laps should be taken all over the place. But that represents, you know, a third of our attack surface when you open up all the other ways an adversary can degrade our ability to do things. That commander needs a similarly empowered person in the acquisition side of the house to build things in concert to ensure that they're built with cyber survivability as a key performance parameter in them, and then are delivered to the fleet cyber commander that he can operate those things. I'd say the same thing for the Marine Corps or the Army or the Air Force. What's happening today is we just have a bunch of different organizations piecemealing solutions together and throwing them out the door and just expect they're all going to work well together. There has to be an accountable person within the department that is ensuring that these things are built in a uniformed way that really enable a cyber platform. And again, this would involve all things within the Department of the Navy: ships, transport, space, infrastructure ashore, defense industrial base, logistics. All of that has to be put together in some intelligent design, you know, in such a way that it's designed to work together. And right now, we don't have a single person that's responsible for doing that.
Chris, you've been very generous with your time, and I've learned a ton, and we probably could talk for another 45 minutes, but unfortunately, we're out of time for today. So let me first thank my guest. Chris Cleary is the former principal cyber advisor for the Department of the Navy. Chris, again, congratulations on your time in the Navy. Congratulations on your decision to leave, of course, and thank you for your service.
Yeah, Jason, thank you so much. I always enjoy doing this.
I'm Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Network. Tune in Thursday mornings at 10 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.